So welcome, welcome to Unity of Whitby on this 4th of July weekend. Isn't it feeling wonderful? It's just a lot of it. And it's so nice to see all these familiar old faces here. It's really, and new ones too. So it's really, really great. And I'm so glad that everyone is here today. Yes. How about an inspiration? So last week I was fortunate enough to attend a couple festivals to sell my wares, and I had the one on Sunday that it's called Scandia Fest, and it's Sons of Norway out of Seattle. They put together this little festival, and it's the raising of the Sommer pole, and it's quite elaborate. They do all this preparation and they play all this music, and then heaving up the pole is quite the job because it's very tall, and it takes about half an hour. And everybody's paying attention to that while it's happening. So I don't have sales, which is nice, because then I get to watch too. And so there was, and this group, for some reason, is in St. Edward State Park, next to Bastyr University. And this group, more than any other, because you would think Sons of Norway, all blonde and blue-eyed, which is generally the case. This has a much more diverse group, which I really enjoy. You know, there's people from all nations that come there, and I don't even know how they know about this festival. But anyway, so there was a Native woman who was standing by my booth and watching the whole ceremony. And we shared a moment, because she just turned to me and she said, "You know, the Native people do the same thing." And she said it with a really sweet and open and realizing. She goes, "We go around in circle together and playing our music, and we wear headdresses." All the women there, the Scandinavian, would have the big floral, and it's a big thing. They all are wearing them. And she says, "We all have headdresses, and we raise the pole." And she just really got her, and I said, "Yes, we're all the same." And she looked at me and said, "Yeah, we really are." I said, "Around the world, there's not a culture that doesn't have rituals like this, you know?" And so I got to share that moment with her, and it was really, really wonderful. And what I really, that was my inspiration for today, but because I really like to share my experiences that have inspired me for this little process here. But then today's daily word was all about the same thing. So I want to read the daily word for you. And you may have already read it, but now you get to listen and not read. Interdependence. I am connected with all beings. We are one in God. At our best, members of the human family rely upon and support one another. We give and receive. We help and are helped. We comfort and are comforted. I remember this if at times I feel alone in the world, even if I'm tempted to cope with a difficult situation on my own. I will accept an offer of help if it comes. Likewise, if I see someone struggling, I will offer to lighten a load. With each interaction, I deepen my awareness of the infinite goodness in all people. I also express my spiritual nature more fully and easily as I communicate, cooperate, and contribute to the good of others and open my heart to receive. We belong to one another, united in our divinity and interdependent in our humanity. And from 1 Peter, finally, all of you have unity of spirit, sympathy, love for one another, a tender heart, and a humble mind. And when I read that this morning, I realized I would have read that, I think, before as all of you have unity of spirit, like have it. But I saw it as an affirmation. You do have it. You don't have to go get it. It is a statement. Finally, you have unity of spirit, sympathy, love for one another, a tender heart, and a humble mind. All right. So, as to surely the presence, right? That's going to lead us.
Isn't that a Christmas song? And that will take us into, with a somewhat energized consciousness, so we don't fall asleep, right into a period of meditation. So let's join together, feeling our presence within our bodies, feet on the floor, firmly resting in our chairs, and allowing each breath to flow within us. Each moment a blessing. Each breath a gift. Let us just feel the grace of this moment touching each of us. Father, Mother, God, I open myself to your healing, to your grace, to your gift of abundant life. I open myself to your wisdom and your love. Let's just take some moments without any narration to reside in the presence of that infinite love, that constant gift from Spirit. Now may we take these next moments together to join in our prayer circle, whether our prayers be of supplication, of gratitude, of simply awe and wonder at some piece of good news or a perception of the beauty of life. Good morning. We're not going to be done at 11, I don't think. Strap in. So, as we were preparing and getting ready and people were coming in with such joy, I wondered if my talk has struck the wrong note. However, it is composed, and I will try to remain composed. And here's what I have to say. Today we come together to commemorate, to celebrate, though that celebration may feel strained at times, the 250th birthday of our nation. A recent cartoon makes the point well. Someone's reading the news, and they look up to say to a friend, It feels wrong to celebrate America's birthday when it's on life support. Yet we've now marked the semi-quincentennial, a word I never anticipated knowing or using, although I love getting new words, of a country whose health I never expected to see brought so low, and citizens so divided. Still, let us celebrate this nation, our union, which has given us birth and light and hope for so long. And let us aspire and pledge to do what we can and what we must to restore health to the body politic. May it yet have a longer life going forward than the 2.5 centuries that have brought us to this moment. While we have reason to be proud of many of our forebears and much of our history, recent days have seen alarming developments that perhaps we've never anticipated, except in disturbing dreams. We cannot tell what will be the end result of this period of our history, whoever could, and whether as a people we will again find the road to the sunlit uplands, as Churchill put it, of freedom, and are at present only on a disturbing detour. There are times when we can only hope and pray that this is the case. It seems somehow appropriate to me that in recognizing the uncertainty of our country's future, we now turn to a man who, for much of his life, was seen as a failure. Certainly no one whose wisdom would benefit anyone. I'm not talking about myself. let alone a nation now grown to more than 340 million souls. I refer to an Englishman who had little education and sparse family support, who failed in his father's business and fell short in yet other enterprises. His first marriage ended tragically, with his wife and infant dying in the delivery process. His second wife left him. He was a traveler who never truly settled down, residing in his birthplace, then journeying to America, and then France, before returning again to the British Isles, a man who, when his days had ended, would have less than a dozen people attend his funeral. I refer to Thomas Paine, the author of Common Sense. A quality that seems to be in short supply as America enters into what we can only hope will be a prosperous and happy additional quarter millennium. These are the times that try men's souls. Words from Paine's quill, 250 years ago, that resonate today, don't they? While that quote is from a later work, The American Crisis, also feels a little bit appropriate now, we may not have known of Tom Paine if his first major tract, Common Sense, had not gone viral, as they say. This 47-page pamphlet was first published anonymously on January 10th, 1776. By early spring of that revolutionary year, 120,000 copies had been sold, and Paine's words rang out in gatherings at taverns and other meeting places. His call for independence, his colonial era cry of no kings, lit a fire for freedom in the colonies. It's estimated that 20% of the 18th century population of America, 2.5 million people, soon had a copy in their home. In the US of 2026, this would translate into sales of 65 to 70 million copies. This was the most rapid fire bestseller in the shortest period in American history. The Second Continental Congress, meeting the prior spring and summer, had not sought independence, but reconciliation with the English monarchy. In fact, since we're gathered on July 5th, it seems apropos to point out that only 1 year before the signing of the Declaration of Independence, 1 year less a day, that is, on July 5th, 1775, this Second Continental Congress adopted what's called the Olive Branch Petition. A majority of the delegates to that Congress joined in an appeal to King George III to grant more equitable trade and taxation policies. They didn't seek independence, and they didn't foresee that as an outcome. It was only a minority of those representing their individual colonies, John Adams and others, who believed that a plea for the king's justice and mercy would fail, and that war was inevitable. And boy, were they right. It's said that George III never even deigned to read this petition. Yes, in July of 1775, the orientation of most of the colonial leadership had been for conciliation and reunion. When that proved impossible, the conflict that followed, the Revolutionary War, led to the founding of our nation. Thomas Paine's writings changed the fundamental stance of the colony's leaders. In Common Sense, he wrote, "In the following pages, I offer nothing more than simple facts, plain arguments, and common sense." We have an opportunity to remake America and make it an example of freedom for the world. We should seize it. We have every opportunity and every encouragement before us to form the noblest, purest constitution on the face of the earth. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. The birthday of a new world is at hand. Let's unite on behalf of America and win our independence. Wherefore, and you can't find a more 18th century word than that one, wherefore, instead of gazing at each other with suspicious or doubtful curiosity, let each of us hold out to his neighbor the hearty hand of friendship and unite in drawing a line which, like an act of oblivion, shall bury in forgetfulness every former dissension. Boy, some of us need that line to bury in forgetfulness every former dissension, whether with a friendship, in a marriage, in a business situation, however, right? Sometimes we're like, can we bury this in forgetfulness? Paine rejected the idea that any man could be born to rule others and ridiculed the notion that an island should try to govern a continent. Where is the king of America? Paine asked in Common Sense. I tell you, friend, in America, the law is king. For as in absolute governments the king is law, so in free countries the law ought to be king, and there ought to be no other. A government of our own is our natural right. And when a man, and it's all this gendered language, and I chose not to change it. I just thought I'll stick with the way he wrote it. When a man seriously reflects on the precariousness of human affairs, he will become convinced that it is infinitely wiser and safer to form a constitution of our own in a cool, deliberate manner while we have it in our power than to trust such an interesting event to time and chance. I love what he's written. Almost done. One more paragraph from Mr. Paine. If we omit it now, some dictator may hereafter arise, who, laying hold of popular disquietudes, may collect together the desperate and the discontented, and by assuming to themselves the powers of government, may sweep away the liberties of the continent like a deluge. Wow. Are these words about 1776 or 2026? Or both? John Adams later wrote, without the pen of the author of Common Sense, the sword of George Washington would have been raised in vain. Paine's ideas summed up America's yearning for freedom, for citizens' natural rights, and ultimately for independence from a repressive, tyrannical system. Professor Melissa Murray of the New York University School of Law says that the lessons of 1776 are playing out in real time today, asserting that the framers of the Constitution would have risen up against the current administration. Murray, best-selling author of The U.S. Constitution, A Comprehensive and Annotated Guide for the Modern Reader, it just came out in May, says, we need citizens who are engaged with the Constitution, who understand it, and who are prepared to stand up to the government if and when it starts slipping into tyranny. If and when. I recently listened to the audio version of Timothy Snyder's book on tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century, published in 2017. I heartily recommend this short and stirring, perhaps chilling, work. And I want to highlight a few of Snyder's lessons, just six of the 20, that feel most relevant to the history we're living through today. The first of these perhaps cuts the deepest. Do not obey in advance. Much of the power of authoritarianism is freely given. Anticipatory obedience teaches authorities what is possible and accelerates unfreedom. 7, stand out, someone has to. And Sally isn't always available. He goes on, he didn't write that part. He goes on to write, it is easy in words and deeds to follow along. It can feel strange to do or say something different, but without that unease, there is no freedom. 8, believe in truth. To abandon facts is to abandon freedom. 9, investigate. Figure things out for yourself. Spend more time with long articles. Subsidize investigative journalism. 19, be as courageous as you can. If none of us is prepared to die for freedom, then all of us will die in unfreedom. He didn't say may. I don't know that he's a perfect predictor. I might have written, then all of us may die in unfreedom. But it's quite a powerful statement. And number 20, be a patriot. Set a good example of what America means for the generations to come. They will need it. Now, today we are gathered not for a civics lesson, but for a religious service and for the potluck. So far, your speaker has focused on America's history as a political entity and some of the current developments troubling the souls of all of good conscience, as I'm sure you'll agree. At this time, many see grave concerns for our nation. With that as a given, what are the spiritual lessons for us in the tests and trials of these days? I think we can reliably, faithfully, and intentionally return to the fundamental unity principles to continually orient ourselves to the sacred realm. So in all times and in all things, let us remember there is only one presence and one power active in the universe and in our lives, God the good, omnipotent. By the way, did you know the unity principles have never been formally codified in terms of the language? Different churches and writers in unity say these things differently. I'm using largely the ones that have been published by Unity of Everett because I like those. Our essence is of God, therefore we are inherently good. We are co-creators with God, framing reality through thoughts held in mind. Through prayer and meditation, we align our heart mind with God. And through thoughts, words, and actions, we live the truth we know. I'm certainly not the first or only person speaking in front of a church to raise questions about freedom, oppression, and justice. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote in his 1963 letter from a Birmingham jail, "Freedom is never given voluntarily by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed." Elsewhere, he pointed out that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Martin Niemöller was a German submarine officer in the First World War. He followed that cataclysm with a catechism. I could not resist the temptation of putting it that way. Entering a seminary and becoming a Protestant pastor. Politically conservative, he voted for the National Socialist ticket in the 20s and in the final election of 1933. He believed Adolf Hitler would lead a national revival. But by 1936, the scales had fallen from his eyes. He joined with other church leaders to sign a petition sharply critical of the Nazi regime. The following year, guess what? He was arrested and eventually spent 8 years in the Sachsenhausen and Dachau concentration camps, narrowly escaping execution at the war's end. In 1946, he published his confessional piece, First They Came. I think the words will be familiar to you, even if you hadn't known this backstory. And there are different versions of this because he spoke it in various gatherings, and it was recorded in different variations. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was a trade unionist. I was not a trade unionist, pardon me. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Perhaps most of us here today feel protected personally in our family lives, in our community, from the worst excesses of a government that many would call tyrannical, and most, I believe, would say is both cruel and incompetent. We may never directly experience this administration's callousness, which some who are less fortunate in terms of birthplace, economic status, and skin color are facing right now, with 10,000 arrests having occurred in the last days of June. But injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. What are we to do? Those we now call the founding fathers and patriots, and no doubt there were many founding mothers and matriots as well. Matriots. Had to decide where their loyalties lay and what actions they would take in the face of oppression. And ultimately, they chose to pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to free themselves from the rule of a king and create a nation of the people, by the people, and for the people. Will we do the same? It's not up to any one of us to answer for all of us. The answer is in the conscience of each person. We may be tested in the coming days. There's a saying attributed to Ben Franklin that some say is apocryphal, but is still appropriate. We must all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall each hang separately. Or as Timothy Snyder writes, if none of us is prepared to die for freedom, then all of us will die in unfreedom. It may well be indeed that we have it in our power to begin the world over again, as Thomas Paine tells us. So let us each follow the guidance of God, seeking the truth in our own hearts. For truly we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. The birthday of our country has come once again, and it may be that the birthday of a new world will be at hand at some point. Let us use whatever common sense we may possess to act in the service of truth, love, and compassion for the sake of all. In these troubled times, let us be a force for good in the world. Let us do this together. Let us ever strive to form a more perfect union. And if necessity dictates we must, let us also mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Thank you.